Tapes and Scouts, a podcast where two friends review every single movie they watch.
It's time to Tapes and Scowls.
I'm already scowling.
Oh. Hold on, I'll come back.
Okay.
In my head, it's just the It's guy from Monty Python.
Yep.
It's. Anyways, we're a movie podcast.
Yes, we are.
That's a TV show, so we can't talk about that.
Ooh. Well, I mean, Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
We can talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how have we not come to think of it?
It's one of the most quotable movies of all time, I think.
Fantastic.
It's very funny.
It's a great movie.
I have to be in the mood for, and I watched Life of Brian and Holy Grail probably, I'd say within 6 months of us starting the podcast. That's one of the reasons I haven't gone back.
That's fair.
Because I hadn't watched Life of Brian. I don't know if I had seen the whole thing. That's how long it had been. Like, I don't know if I saw the whole thing through. And I was like, I want to see which one's really, I think, is better.
I think it flows worse.
Life of Brian?
Yeah. I think that's what I would.
I liked Life of Brian better than Holy Grail, but it's not by much.
It can't be.
Holy Grail had the more iconic moments, but sure. I think Life of Brian on the whole was a more enjoyable film.
That's fair. No, but they're all solid.
You're not going to go wrong with Monty Python, especially of that era.
Oh my God, so good.
Yeah.
So good.
Yep.
Monty Python podcast coming in the next 12 years.
Right?
Regular Capes and Scouts time. The Simpsons podcast getting closer, though.
Yeah,
Mr.
Right.
Show one should be any day now.
Ooh.
None of these will ever happen.
It's okay. you gotta demand it, people.
Yeah, you gotta interact. You gotta rate, review. Your review could just be like, do that thing.
Simpsons now.
Simpsons now, please. Thank you.
That's right.
Max, would you like to go first, or would you like for me to go first?
What year was your movie made in?
2020.
All right, I'm going first.
Okay.
I did 1981.
Ooh.
Knight Riders. There's nothing to do with Knight Rider.
What?
Watch this in August of 2020. It is 2 hours and 26 minutes long. It is a drama action film directed by George A. Romero.
Ooh, yeah. Interesting.
Starring Ed Harris, Tom Savini, and Patricia Tallman.
I like all of those people.
Yes, it's a good one.
Yeah.
We'll get into it.
Uh-oh.
Movie summary. A modernized medieval reenactment troupe find it difficult to keep their family-like group together. With mounting pressure from local law enforcement, interest from entertainment agents, and a growing sense of delusion from their leader.
I almost watched this movie. It is sitting in my queue.
It's a cool movie.
Once you read that description, I'm like, oh, wait, I know this movie. Okay.
Yeah, it is a cool movie. It's basically a group of Renaissance fair aficionados who do jousting on motorcycles.
Yeah, that's great.
And Ed Harris is the main character. Tom Savini is kind of the antagonist in this film, but not really kind of. It's more of a drama than that. It's everybody's. Sure. They all want to succeed, but want to do things differently. And you get that tension of like a group leader making a decision that the underling doesn't like. And it's a really unique and bizarre movie, especially when you consider this is made by George A. Romero, who's famous for, if you're not familiar, Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, various and sundry of the deads.
So many deads.
Yeah, Land of the Dead, Diary of the Dead, I mean, you name
Helicopter it. Helicopter of the Dead.
Yeah, absolutely. Cardboard Box of the Dead.
Oh, that's my favorite one. How many can they fit in there?
You don't know. And a lot of paper cuts, and the zombies don't seem to notice or care.
It's a prequel to Dave Made a Maze.
That's right.
Hi, Dave Made a Way. Yeah, I can't talk. Hi, Dave Made a Maze.
That movie's awesome. Go back and listen to my review on that one.
I like that those people follow us on Instagram, and every now and then they'll like what we do.
That's cool. Yeah, that movie's
nice
great.
People.
So
nice
good.
People.
So it's pretty cool in an interesting way. You can tell that it's a personal story, and I'm not sure how the I guess like you can kind of think of it as Ed Harris is the director of a movie, and everybody else is the actors, and then you have the mechanics who are kind of like the behind the scenes people, and you have the people who do take the tickets, and it's kind of like a weird parallel to making a movie.
Okay.
That's what I think he was trying to do with it. To me, and again, out there, please hit us up on Twitter and let us know what you think if you've seen this film. But it feels very personal. As you can tell, it's a long-ass runtime. And it's a really, like, could you imagine trying to pitch this to somebody to give you money? Like,
no.
Even as George Romero, like, hi, I'm George Romero. Oh, cool. I'll give you money for the next zombie picture. Well, actually, I have a movie about guys who joust on motorcycles. I don't have any money for you, George Romero. Get out of my office. Like, that's what it feels like. But you can tell it's really a heartfelt story. And Ed Harris does such a good job of kind of helming the ship in this film.
Ed Harris might be one of, he's like top three for me. Like, I never dislike a movie with Ed Harris.
He's so good all the time. He always puts it out there.
Yeah, exactly.
He's really good. I think Savini, seeing him on the screen too, is pretty neat, and not just like, you know what I mean? Like, he's there for a minute. He's there doing his thing. He's like, you know what I mean? Like, kind of the like bad boy.
Does he have a leather jacket?
He does not have a leather jacket. I'm pretty sure.
Missed up.
He's got leather armor.
Oh, well, sure. That would happen.
Yeah. So he's got that going for him.
Okay.
But you can tell it means a lot to him, and there are certainly ideas in here, and like the way Harris plays it, it's really interesting, but it feels too personal, if that makes sense, where I can't quite follow exactly what Romero's trying to say with the film at times. So it's a little bit lost on me. I think for the most part, it feels like there was something he was trying to convey, but I don't know if it was lost in the editing or, you know, it was just too personal and something I personally just can't, he and I don't walk the same path, so I can't relate. And maybe somebody who has had more work, like more in line with Romero's career, could find like, no, you missed this point, or no, you're missing this idea. And that's entirely possible, but it's good, but it doesn't quite resonate for me the way I feel like it would resonate for somebody else.
Right.
Especially, you know, not, and I know he said this is one of his, like, this is one of his favorite films that he's made.
Hmm.
He was, like, quoted several times saying that this one kind of means the most to him, which is interesting.
It's interesting, yeah, for sure. We're doing something different, right?
Yeah, it's cool. And definitely not like any movie you will have seen before. It's really interesting. It has that George Romero kind of grime to it. Like, it feels like you're in the Renaissance Fair. Like, you can smell the mud and the food for sale and the people.
Funnel cakes.
Oh, yeah. Like, funnel cakes are like turkey legs and things. Yeah. Like, yeah, like it just, yeah. You can feel the Renaissance Fair. Like, it's got that good griminess to it that Romero gets.
I like that.
Yeah, love how gritty his work always, without being like, you know, people make things look intentionally gritty. I know we talked about that a bunch. Like, skipping, like, processing pieces or intentionally putting a filter on to make it look grimy. Romero's just like, I don't want to call Romero grimy, but he's just so good at capturing filth.
Yeah.
And, like, not in a gross way, but just things look slimy. That's why Dawn of the Dead, I think, resonates with so many people, because it looks nasty.
Where was Pittsburgh,
Pittsburgh, yeah.
It's your fault, Pittsburgh.
I guess so. I mean, filming all that Mr. Rogers for so many years was the thing, so I guess. But
I've been to Pittsburgh. It's very clean.
It's very nice city, yeah.
Super clean.
Yep.
Closes too early for me, though.
It does. It does. Outside of, like, the Fabric District,
yeah.
The art house and stuff, like, it's, yeah. It's a weird city, but it's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
IMDb, 6.3 out of 10 for this one.
Okay.
Yeah, not bad. No, Rotten Tomato good. Critics, 13 critics went back and reviewed this to 77%.
Okay.
Audience, 2,500 plus, gave this 61%. And again, tried and true, I'm in the middle of the pack here with a 6.5 out of 10.
That's awesome. So it sounds like a lot of people wanted to just be like, what? He did a thing that didn't have zombies, and they were all pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, it seems like it's pretty cool. It's just, there's something about it that doesn't quite click.
Right.
But it's close. It's pretty good. It works. It's like, you're not going to throw away the lock because it locks, but it doesn't have that nice satisfying, like, you're sure it's locked.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Unlike the locks on these doors.
Oh.
Very satisfying click every time you leave.
Ka-chunk.
Yeah, and then you make the noises afterwards, and that doesn't help.
Ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk. Yeah. Did I really walk away?
I don't know.
The answer is always no. I actually just sleep crying on the other side of the door.
Oh, okay.
We have a complicated...
It is very complex, related, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I got a movie.
Ooh.
I think a lot of people like this movie.
Ooh.
Because it won an Academy Award this year. 2020's Soul.
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 I saw this movie.
I also saw this movie. And I have a hot take on it at the end.
Whoa.
I watched it's not that hot. Oh. This movie is good. I watched this on the 15th of February. It's an hour 40. Animation adventure comedy directed by Pete Docter. With Kemp Powers.
Ah,
they sound like fake names. Starring Jamie Foxx, Tina Fey, and Graham Norton.
Yeah, yeah.
Your IMDb movie summary. After landing the gig of a lifetime, a New York jazz pianist suddenly finds himself trapped in a strange land between Earth and the afterlife.
Yep.
My bullet points. Surprised that a Disney Pixar would touch on heaven and hell as a topic in general. The fact that we have souls as an idea.
Yep.
Very surprised. It's like almost like a no-no. Like, you don't do that. You don't put that in your kids' stuff.
Yep.
So I was super surprised that it went so deep into it instead of just like touched on it.
Yep.
Didn't bother me in any way, but I was surprised.
Yep.
Very creative world building.
Yeah.
I was very surprised about that as well. And it's got a strong musical score. The jazz is great.
It is.
It'll uplift you. It is fantastic. I think, was it Max Weinberg? Who worked on this movie with them?
That makes sense.
I think it was. It was somebody that is... I'm dropping the ball. Look it up, people.
Max Weinberg of the E Street Band.
That's the guy.
Or the Max Weinberg 7, if you like Conan.
That's which I do.
Oh, yeah. I know you do.
love me some Conan.
Max Weinberg and his stuff on Conan was just legendary.
Even if it isn't, Max Weinberg, great.
Oh, he is.
So, yeah, he was really a good straight man to Conan's chicanery.
Oh, definitely.
Conan podcast coming 16 more years. Tim promises all these podcasts, and then he died. That's weird.
Was it? Or was it expected?
Yeah, it's pretty much what I do.
Yeah.
So what did you think of this movie? I thought it was pretty solid. It was, like I said, a weird kind of concept. And a very... Because basically when he passes,
yeah,
he's in a limbo. He breaks away from the line going to heaven. He's like, no, I'm about to get the opportunity of a lifetime. I got to go back. And he's trying to figure out a way to go back. And it is weird.
It is weird. This movie was really... I think weird's a good way to describe it for me. He dies by falling... through an open manhole, and he's not looking like it's like what? Like, it's so bizarrely cartoony for Pixar. Sure. Like, I don't know if it was intentional that, like, we're gonna, because we're dealing with a subject as heavy as death, we're gonna make it as like Looney Tunes as possible.
Maybe.
That's kind of what it felt like to me, but it was a really, like, it just felt like we have to off him. What's the like, it made me kind of hate the character a little bit.
He is not likable for a good portion of the movie.
Yeah, it's like, not likable for, I don't know, just, there's so, and then, like, the
because he wants something for him.
Yeah.
Where he made this mistake, and, like, the tease of him about to die, they tease it a bunch of times. It's, like, super Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
And when he finally falls in the hole, you're like, I don't even know if he's dead, but it's like, this guy is just clearly screwing up.
Yeah, it's really weird. Like, I don't know how I feel about it still. Like, this was a tough movie for me to unpack for a Pixar. Normally, Pixar movies are generally home runs for me. Like, you get some weird ones in there. Wall-E's a weird one. I haven't even finished Wall-E because it was just so strange. I'm like,
I didn't even bother with Wall-E.
It's like, this is weird. But usually they're just, like, Finding Nemo is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Up is fantastic. Like, I mean, most
Up
of them are just
really good.
Yeah, there's just so many, like, Toy Story 1 and 3 are fantastic. Yeah. It's just, they're all great. And then you have this one, it was just kind of like, what the hell is going on here? I was happy Richard Iowade was a voice in it.
Yes, it's very cool.
Yeah, I was just like, that's neat. But like, overall, it was a tough one for me. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And like you said, I think the music's the high point.
The music is fantastic.
Yeah, music is very good in this. It's just, it was a weird one. And seeing Pixar trying to play out actual factual humans, which is different.
Right. Tina Fey did a really good job.
Yes.
But again, a weird character.
Very weird.
And I'm like, who am I rooting for?
Yep.
Because it's almost like a competition. Who is going to be brought back? It's either her character or him is what you're kind of feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, I don't. And part of me is like, I want him to die. I want him to go to heaven or hell. I want him to go where he's supposed to go. I don't get a do-over.
Right. And it's weird because it's like, he's tested, like he's dead, but he wants to get back. And it's like he's being punished for, like, you can't really tell what. Like, he's a music teacher trying to make his career as a musician and never really got the chance. He finally did, and he just got screwed. And it's kind of like, that's harsh.
Yeah.
It's like, what lesson does he have to learn here exactly? Like, then you start to unpack it later as you go through, and like he gets to his mother and stuff.
I like the scenes with his mother.
Yeah. I think that was the best scene in the movie.
By far.
Yeah.
But just. A weird adventure.
Yes.
Not a bad one. A weird.
Weird. With like the body swapping stuff. And it's just like, what the heck is going on in this film?
Right. It was unusual. But we'll see. We'll see what the scores say. So it won the Oscar for
Best
Animated.
Where's the cat soul go?
Where do the cat souls go?
Because the cat soul just comes back at the end. It's just, that's weird.
Well,
that's,
they have multiple lives.
Do they have souls?
Maybe they don't have multiple lives, but they have multiple souls.
It's interesting because... they don't ever tackle that in this film.
Pixar, get at me. I got ideas about cat souls.
Cat souls.
Cat soul. IMDb gave this an 8.1. Rotten Tomato critics, 95%. 333. They're half as evil. Rotten Tomato audience, 88%. 5,000 plus. And this may have shifted slightly again because it was pretty new when I watched it. And do you want to guess the score, both myself, my wife, and the mother-in-law? Not only did we all watch it together, we all came to the same score.
Holy crap.
This has never happened, will likely never happen again. Do you want to guess that score?
I'm going to go with 6.0.
It is more than that.
Okay.
It is a 7.5.
Okay.
For as weird as this movie is and as head-scratchy as it is, it's still super good.
It is.
Now, my hot take.
Please.
I think there's two movies that were nominated for Best Animated Feature that are better than this movie.
Hmm.
One of them I already reviewed, which was Onward. I think Onward was way better.
You liked Onward a lot.
And there's one, I think, which I'll get to later, that I think is better than both of them.
Holy shit.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
So put that in your pipe and smoke it.
No kidding. Yeah.
Boom. Teasers for months from now, probably.
I like that. No, I like that. It's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would probably come in a little lower, probably like a 6.5 or so. I agree with you. For as much weird shit's going on in this film, that's like, huh? Pixar's so good at their writing and their style that it's just, they still hold on to you.
It's Jamie Foxx. He's always great.
It's like, we're laying down some weird ass shit, but you're going to love it anyway because we're Pixar. So you love us. Deal with it.
Yep.
And you're just like, yeah, I do. I do. So yeah, no, I don't disagree.
Mm-hmm.
1994.
Mm-hmm.
Clerks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm very curious how you rank this.
I watched this in August of the 2020.
Mm-hmm.
1 hour and 45 minutes long it is.
Sure is.
Comedy film. Yeah. It also is. Directed by Kevin Smith as well. Starring Brian O'Halloran, Jeff Anderson, and Jason Mewes.
Very nice people.
Yes. IMDb movie summary here is a day in the life of a young convenience store clerk who is called into work on his day off.
Not even supposed to be here today.
That's right. My thoughts on this movie is it is so well done.
Mm-hmm.
It is kind of, to me, the pinnacle of the old write what you know ethos.
Yep.
I don't think there's a better example of somebody writing what they knew than Smith writing this film. At the time in his life, he worked at the store they shot it in. He shot this at night after it closed. The reason why the steel shutters could never open in the movie is because he filmed it at night. And he didn't want people to realize that it was dark outside. So he left the steel shutters closed and just wrote in a gag to make them closed.
Bunch of savages.
A bunch of savages in this town. It's really smart. It helped. It backed, piggybacking on the Quentin Tarantino, became like the talkies of the 90s, and it kind of like branched off into what would later become like the mumblecore movement and things like that. This whole idea of you don't really have to be doing anything. You can set a camera down in a static spot and have two people having an interesting conversation and people, people who like, we all like to talk, right? That's the nature of humanity. We want to communicate. We will watch these two people have a discussion about Star Wars and roofers.
Yep.
Because that's interesting if you're into that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It feels very authentic. I think the rough spots in the movie and like the things he did to kind of try to gloss over like financial constraints and amateur, like him just not knowing about film, end up kind of working in the film's favor a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Like shooting it in black and white, kind of the not professional actors, they all give a lot of super memorable moments.
Right.
Like the roofer, who's not just a dude.
He's just a dude.
That he knew and came in. I think he does a really nice job. I mean, like everybody who comes in that movie has like, you're kind of like, oh, that guy. Like they all have their own little personality because they're just regular folk.
They're just dudes.
Yep. Which I think is really cool. And it's so much fun. I mean, this movie is great. I think Anderson and Halloran are fantastic.
Very good. They're very good together.
Yes. They play off each other really well. They feel like two dudes from North Jersey who mm-hmm. work in a convenience store.
Yeah. Us being from Jersey, it's like, man.
Yeah.
This is perfect.
This is exactly, like, he nails it. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so good. You get the guy who pretends he doesn't care, but cares too much with O'Halloran. Yeah. And then you have the guy who legitimately gives zero fucks out of Jeff Anderson. Like, he's just trying. He thinks he's so cool and he's above it, even though he's doing it, but he's better than everybody. I mean, everybody knows somebody like that. Everybody knows somebody like Dante, the O'Halloran character. Mm-hmm. We've all met those people, and usually we are both of those people at different times.
Sure. Yeah.
Because that's how you get through a day of work most of the time, is you're a little bit of Dante, you're a little bit of Randall, which I think is really interesting.
I think I'm a little too much Randall sometimes.
You are. You definitely are a lot more towards the Randall side.
I like chaos.
Yeah, you do. You hate people, but you love gatherings.
Ah, it's a curse.
It's a really fun movie. I laugh every time I watch it. I laugh. It's one of those movies that I could be having a rough day. I can pop in Clerks and it will make me feel better.
Yeah.
It really is just a panacea film. Like, it just makes me feel warm and
and fuzzy inside.
I love it. IMDb gives this a 7.7 out of 10.
Hmm.
Rotten Tomatoes critics, 57 critics went back, reviewed this to 89%.
57?
In a row. And then the audience, 250,000 plus, also put this film at an 89%. I am coming in
above.
Above, but by like a hair at a 9 out of 10.
I might actually give this a 9.5.
This movie is phenomenal.
Love this movie.
This is real good. I will get to all the Kevin Smith movies. Well, the View Askew movies anyway, specifically. I don't get into Tusk and Red State and his later horror stuff.
Don't worry, I did Tusk for you.
Yes, you did. So
Red State, great.
Yeah, I love Red State. But yeah, so I'll get in through all of these, but I won't spoil my order till the end.
Nice.
So for now, you get Clerks with more to come.
Man goes into Gage. Gage goes into Salsa. Shark's in Salsa.
Our shark. So good.
Well, did you believe there's still another movie?
No.
We're so happy at this episode.
We are.
That's wild. Well, I got a movie. It's a sequel, and it's part of currently a trilogy. It's the second Rurouni Kenshin movie.
Ooh.
Kyoto Inferno.
Burn, baby, burn.
There's a lot of things that get set on fire.
Burn, baby, burn.
Kyoto Inferno.
Yeah.
It's about disco in Japan in the feudal era.
I think that's fair.
I would watch that movie.
I absolutely would.
Somebody get at it. Not me, though.
Looking for the creators of Six String Samurai.
Oh, my God. Yeah. There's a movie that needs to get on here.
Yeah.
Holy, who's going to do it first, you or me?
They just released like a special edition Blu-ray, like 4K Blu-ray combo pack for it.
I had never heard of that movie, and I found it randomly while searching on like Amazon or something. I'm like, I don't know what this is, but I need it in my life, and I bought it.
Yeah, it's awesome. And love that movie.
Anyways, Kyoto Inferno from Rurouni Kenshin. It's from 2014. I watched it on a Thursday. That's all I remember. 2 hours, 18 minutes, so it feels a little long. Like I said, the production gets better in this one, though. Action-adventure drama, directed by Keishi Otomo, starring Takaru Satch, Emi Takai, and Tatsuyo Fujiwara.
You managed to fumble your way through that one pretty nicely.
I do better with the Japanese names, for sure. IMDb movie summary. Kenshin Himura goes up against pure evil Makoto Shishio, who is attempting to overthrow the Meiji government. The fate of the country hangs in the balance as Kenshin takes up the sword that he vowed never to draw again. This movie is definitely the Empire Strikes Back of this trilogy.
Oh, that's exciting.
It ends on a down note. And it clearly needs another movie to finish the storyline.
That's cool.
And I love every second of it. It has a wild fight scene in it, which is like a whole town reacting to all the violence that is happening around them.
Whoa.
Lots of innocent people in the way. Lots of evil samurais hacking and slashing.
Love that.
I remember I told Cliff that this guy was the villain, the Shishio character. He's like, why is that guy the villain? He's like, not that important. And I was like, this character, the way they did him is fantastic.
That's awesome.
Essentially, Shishio is the replacement for Kenshin after he vowed to never be a sellsword, essentially, again.
So Shishio is Rufio.
Yes, he's Rufio.
Okay.
For sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he ends up getting betrayed by the government after the fact, and they leave him for dead and they burn his body.
Oh, wow.
He survives.
Okay.
So he's covered in really weird looking bandages.
Oh, cool. That's very anime.
It's super. He looks like an anime villain.
That is anime, yeah.
Undeniably.
Yep.
The thing that this movie does really good is feel like an anime one. Because they introduce so many side villain characters. In the first one, you didn't see them do anything. And I had mentioned that I wasn't sure who the strongest one was. And I was a little surprised by who it was. Because you just weren't sure. It was everybody posturing. But until shit break down, you don't know.
Exactly.
In this one, they're kind of testing him the whole time. And there's a really great scene early on where he fights an underling character. Which I don't think I wrote his name. Yes, I did. Seda Sojiro. Is the character. He is a young swordsman. He is crazy fast. He looks exactly like he looks in the anime because I looked it up. And Kenshin fights him pretty early on, and it is very clear he probably can't beat him.
Yeah.
And you're like, he can't beat this guy? He has to go fight that guy.
Yeah.
What is he going to do? So it has this real tone of misery almost for Kenshin. So really good character building. Really makes you want to see what is going to happen.
That's cool.
In the third movie. It's just a very good movie. A lot of people, and judging from the scores, a lot of people feel these movies get better each one.
Oh, cool.
This one is my favorite.
Nice.
And I guess because it's the Empire, it's the down note, it's that whole thing.
Well, I mean, Empire is the best Star Wars film.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah.
Just a good, really good. The set designs, my God, the city and like things on fire and like all the extras that have to be moving while all these moving parts are going off is bonkers.
That's what that like the Asian cinema, their ability to, one thing they're good at is stick the camera here. Here's all the crazy shit that's going to happen in front of this camera. It just told you in all, because Americans don't do that. We cut, we use the camera to get away from it, to get to somebody's face so we can get the hell out of this wide shot. Japanese are just like, fuck it. Leave it in that wide shot. Everybody, here's all your choreography. Don't fuck up.
Right.
It's cool.
And they'll go between the wide shot, and they must have hidden cameras or cameramen that like blend in.
Yeah.
Because then you'll get these real tight shots, and mm-hmm. it's like, it goes together just perfectly.
Yep.
There is, I gotta say, this is my favorite one, but the third one probably has the greatest camera work.
Nice.
Out of all of them.
That's cool.
So we'll get there, but for now, let's go to the scores.
Please.
IMDb gives it a 7.6.
Okay.
The Rotten Tomato critics did not do it again.
Oh, damn you, critics.
The audience, though, did. 500 plus gave it 82%.
Okay.
I gave it a 7.0.
Nice.
And Mr. Kevin Michael agreed and gave it a 7.0 as well.
Nice. So definitely an improvement.
It's an improvement. I mean, you can argue, is it the strongest villain characters? But I think as the story grows, you really start to... And by the time the third one gets to the end, you're just like, oh my God, I want more.
Yeah, that's
so
awesome.
It's doing what it should do. And it feels like an anime. So that's cool. That's what I wanted.
Awesome.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.